In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLachlan. Jay McLachlan is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLachlan and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLachlan stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLachlan's
local and loyal programming.
Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLachlan's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLachlan. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLachlan is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20. Capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital ZIBBY20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLachlan. Thanks so much.
Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, and I am the host of this podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. I am also a newly minted USA Today bestselling author of the novel Blank. I've created a whole community of book lovers around this podcast, a publishing company, reading retreats, a bookstore, and more. Learn more at ZibbyMedia.com or follow me on social at Zibby Owens or join the community at Zibby Readers. Estella Rasmus is the author of Writing That Gets Noticed, Find Your Voice, Become a Better Storyteller, and Get Published. Estella is actually moderating a panel on the Zibbyverse tour for the Women's Media Group. Estella is an award-winning journalist, a professor of writing at New York University, a magazine editor, an in-demand public speaker, and the host of the Freelance Writing Direct podcast. Her articles for the New York Times and the Washington Post have gone globally viral. She has appeared on Good Morning America and has had her articles discussed on The View. She has also taught, coached, and mentored many writers who have gone on to be widely published. She received a 2023 NYU School of Professional Studies Teaching Excellence Award, a 2023 Zibby Award, naming Writing That Gets Noticed the best book for the writer. Thank you very much. She is also an American Society of Journalists and Authors Award winner and was a cast member in the inaugural New York City production of the Listen to Your Mother storytelling show. Find her at Estella S. Erasmus. If you sign up for her newsletter, you can get a free pitching guide. And on social media, at Estella S. Erasmus on TikTok, Instagram, X, and Threads. Welcome, Estella. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss writing that gets noticed, find your voice, become a better storyteller, get published.
Thanks so much, Zippy. It's great to be here.
I love that you have a whole section in your book about interviewing, and here I am interviewing you. So you can take apart my strategy, whatever you need to do. You're the expert here.
I think you're an expert interviewer because I've listened to enough of your programs to know that.
Well, I love how you open up your whole career, your life, your daughter, all of the things that made you into who you are and made you the expert, which of course is one of your strategies for the pitching author is to be, you know, how to present yourself as an expert. Tell listeners about why you wrote this book, why you're the one to write it, and then we'll go into like specific advice.
Yeah, I really wanted to distill my three decades of experience in publishing on both sides of the publishing wall as an assigning magazine editor and editor-in-chief and somebody who's also written for a lot of publications and been teaching at NYU and for Writer's Digest. I'm now a contributing editor at Writer's Digest.
Amazing. And there's so much in the book. For anybody who wants to write an essay or wants to be, and you even go through the different types of essays that you can do, reported pieces and personal, you know, all of the things. What's one thing that people who are like out there and they want to be published and they don't know where to start? You know, I love, maybe we could start with all of your inspiration ideas because you have a lot of those too, of how to get going and how to get the ideas flowing.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many scientifically proven reasons why people can generate ideas. And so I cover some of them in my book. I think I cover like 20 of them. And one of the things is if you're struggling to get the words down on the page in the first place, change the format. You know, we're all told like to do Times 12 Roman and, you know, it's do it on Comic Sans. Or even handwrite it, because that tricks the brain into feeling a different way and it lets the ideas flow. It gets us to that state of flow that we're always, as writers, as you know so well, are trying to get to. Other things is, you know, people have always said, oh, I get my best ideas in the shower. Well, there's a reason. There's a scientifically proven reason. It gets you into the beta wave pattern where you can, you're more open to the ideas. And in terms of idea generation, listen to where what your friends are talking about. Listen to those conversations that you kind of can eavesdrop on. Set up Google alerts for topics that you're interested in. And that's something, Zibby, that before I started researching the book, I had talked to a lot of authors for articles I wrote for the New York Times, Washington Post, and a lot of parenting pieces as well. And a lot of authors said to me, when I start a book, I set up a Google alert for any of the ideas in the book that I'm covering. And A, it might get information to me that I need, like a new study or a new survey. B, it starts me thinking of different ways of looking at material. And as writers, that's what we're looking. We're trying to have curious minds, because curious minds will let the information in and we'll be able to continue our creative work.
Wow. So important. And I just loved it. I feel like I'm not usually at a lack of ideas, but maybe good ideas or, you know, one thing you said, which I hadn't thought of is how repetitive motions help you come up with ideas. Like even something simple as folding the laundry. Sometimes I feel bad if I'm doing something else, you know, and even when you said like your brain has to take a break. Last night I watched the Oscars and I'm like, I should be writing my next novel, but I really just want to watch this. I really just want to watch and I have to like give myself a break. So how do you know when to push and when to take the breaks?
Yeah, I talk about in the book that, you know, watching bad reality television, first of all, you're thinking my problems can't be as bad as that. Thing is, our brain is always working. So for the people who say, oh, I have to write 350 words every day because 350 words a day is a book a year. I mean, look, I'm a mom, you're a mom, you know, it's just impossible. It's so hard to do that. I'm what I call, and what I learned from Anne Hood, who was a guest on my program, Freelance Writing Director, and you've been a guest. And Anne said she's a volcano writer, which is it bubbles up and then she writes. And I find that I'm like that too. So don't put a certain construct on yourself that you have to do things a certain way. Find different ways. I started my career at Women's World Magazine, where I had 7 deadlines a week. Oh, well, you know what? I was writing. We didn't have iPhones then, but you know, I was writing on scraps of paper. And what I learned as a mom when my daughter was little, I would be on the pickup line and I would write in my, you know, in the notes app of like, you know, the phone, even before the iPhone, you know, the first smartphone. And so just don't let anything constrain you, because your ideas are valid. You're going to find out, learn how to pivot. I mean, I pivoted so much in my career, right? I mean, I started in print and then print started dying and I went to online. And then I dealt with infertility and I learned about blogging through Listen to Your Mother. And the bloggers were the first ones with social media. Nobody else was doing social media but the bloggers, and so on, so on. And now we have TikTok, although I think the government's going to take it away, but that's a whole But own your mailing list. Keep your, you know, I've kept both MailChimp and Substack. So, you know, keep everything, because you just don't know, and you need the things that you have. Look, you've created so much, Zibby. I mean, you're amazing. I've known you for several years now, and you've just created an empire, and we're going to talk more about that for Women's Media Group. But, you know, it's just keeping everything in motion and being open and setting up those Google alerts. Back to the Google alerts is a great way to just keep expanding your mind. And also, I talk in the book about doing mining your life for ideas. So like a mapping template, you know, and one of the things I do when I have my class at NYU or Writer's Digest or coaching is I say, look, write down everything who you are. I'm a mom of four. I've created a publishing company. I'm pretending I'm you. I've created a publishing
company. Do it all day. I'll be you. You be me. I could use a break from myself.
I have a viral article that just came out in Vogue about my, you know, about my marriage. So you can write down all those things and you start seeing where your areas of resonance and passion is. And then you connect it to what's going on in the news. You look and you see, okay, let's say, and this isn't you, but let's say I'm obsessed with bowling, right? And maybe some celebrity just came out and they said, oh my God, my best, you know, I created the idea for my Oscar-winning movie when I was bowling. There you go. You have a timely hook now that you can tie in to whatever it is that you want to write about bowling. And I did that when I was obsessed with Penny Marshall, who was Laverne and Laverne and Shirley. We're both busty, and she had a lot of chutzpah, and I was nerdy. I had my nose in a book. I was singing in the hallways. I was not popular because I was just my own kind of airy-fairy person. And I just looked up to her. So I wrote about it when she died. But, you know, with a celebrity dying, you have to be right there on the wave. And I missed it. I missed the boat. That was 2018. She died. I set up a Google alert for anything having to do with Penny Marshall. I was like, what, you know, anything. She was the first $100 million movie director. She did Big. She did a League of Their Own. And all of a sudden, in 2021, I received notification on my Google Alert that A League of Their Own, the series, was coming to Amazon Prime. And I said, that's it. That is my timely peg. I framed my pitch to the editor of the Ethel, AARP, the Ethel, 60 million circulation. And I sent it to her and she said, yes, you know, just make sure that in your essay you have this, that, and the other and scenarios. I already had that because I had written the essay. And it got in. So 4 years after she died.
Wow. I thought you were going to say we need Google alerts for everybody who dies and try to make it all timely. I'm like, that is dark, Estelle. That is dark.
And I wouldn't recommend that, but I wouldn't not recommend that because like people said to me, oh, I had an incident where I met Tony Bennett. And I said, did you pitch when he died? And they're like, no, because I hadn't written it up. I'm like, write it up. You know, that one you could have written up and had ready. Now, not everyone is walking around dealing with celebrities, right? So it's going to be very rare that somebody's going to have that. But, you know, if you've had life experiences, have them ready to go and then see what they connect with.
This is when I took a writing class like years and years ago, I was surprised by Sue Shapiro. You must know. Anyway, that's one of the things she said in the beginning is like, find your timely thing. Like, people are only going to pay attention if it's timely. Tell everyone you're pitching. It's timely. You know, so I still sometimes do that. I did that like last week about International Women's Day. And I kind of chuckled to myself because I'm still using what she taught me. Like, I have a timely thing about International Women's Day. You know, you have to use it.
Absolutely. And Sue, I have a funny story about Sue. I was the senior editor at American Woman magazine. And I was looking for an end of the book funny story about Barbie. And yep. Somebody, and I was reaching out and somebody said, Sue Shapiro loves Barbie. And I'm like, who is this writer? And we got in contact and I hired her to write a funny piece about, but I have to find that piece. I have to look
for it. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Tell me about your advice about writing your own 6-word memoir.
I do that. I teach a micro memoir course and I get people to hone down who they are in 6 words. It's kind of like a thinking process. It gets you to identify what's important to you. And so, you know, it's really interesting. Like I think I said, midlife mom finds self in writing editing or something like that, or in motherhood. I don't remember what I said, but I said something in 6 words. And so it's an exercise that starts people, especially if they're going to write micro memoir, which is, you know, like tiny love stories in the New York Times. It's 100 words or less. And it really is a full story. It's a story from the past because it's micro memoir. It's not necessarily flash. And so it takes a story from the past and it has a narrative arc, a beginning, a middle, an end. It's not just a fragment. It's not just a poem. It's an actual story. And so starting with the 6 words, I mean, I think the most famous one was, oh my gosh, who is it? It was the one that, you know, baby shoes unworn. Hemingway wrote it. Yeah. And so in that, those 6 words, it's like a story of a lost baby. And so people struggle with it a little bit, but it does help encapsulate their ideas. What would you do, Zippy?
Oh, for 6 words? Oh my gosh. Tired Traveler Tries Podcast with expert.
A podcast entree way to empire. Empire. Mom finds podcast entryway to publishing empire.
Oh, okay. Not
there you go,
okay,
man.
Well, anyway, okay. I like it. So it's one thing when we have the ideas, right? And we are narrowing down our voice based on who we are. But the writing itself, I feel like people struggle with this. How do you make sure your writing is clear, is not attention getting, but how do you differentiate yourself from the 8 bazillion other writers out there who were also pitching that day? Or once you have the article, what is your advice on making it the best it can be?
Yeah. So here's one of my things. I'll talk about pitching first, and then I'll talk about essays. So when you're pitching, even if you're pitching an essay, sometimes the editor won't read the whole essay. They want to be enticed, right? So I say something in my book called Write to the Reader, which is taking that first paragraph of whatever you've written, which supposedly is going to be a wonderful scenario with an anecdote, with something happening that's going to entice the reader into the story, and use that and show the editor that this is, you know, I have an essay about, here is the first paragraph, or here is a substantial part of it. And you don't give a lot, but you give the first paragraph and they will see a couple of things. They'll see how you execute, because with editors, as you know, in an essay, it's all about execution. And in something that your voice is going to be important, which is an essay, because that is who you are on the page. With an article, it often has to be journalistic, but I also talk to my students about how to show their voice in the page. You have to insert yourself into the story somehow, and you can do that in a subtle way. Otherwise, you're just reporting on something. And I'll give an example from my own life. When I pitched the editor of the Times for How to Bullyproof Your Child back in 2019, I framed it around a story about my daughter and an incident where she was bullied. Because I framed it around that, and then I went into the journalistic elements and the interviews and all the service examples, which is service journalism, which is most of what's out there today, which is ways to improve your life and your situation. Because I put myself in the story that way, or I put my daughter in the story, that's why Good Morning America, which I know you're a regular on, you know, had asked me to come on the show, because it wasn't just me reporting on everybody else. It was something. And the reason I wanted to write this is because I was a mom, because it was important to me. And when I was interviewed for the Well newsletter, I was like the only person interviewed, I think, after the story went viral. I talked about when I was younger, I was bullied, and I went to the guidance counselor. And so lunchtime, I was sitting by myself in the guidance counselor's office having lunch. And she said that, you know, you have to look at it as if it's a free country. You have to let people, you know, people can say something, but you have to show that you're your own person. You have to stand up, but you can't be angry about it. You can't be mean about it, because then you're the bad one. And so I learned something about role playing in that situation that I did with the guidance counselor. And later on, I was able to use that when my daughter was in a situation where she was bullied. And I felt it was important for me to write about it, because it's been such a big part of my life. And it was something that I wanted to teach my daughter and make her kind of able to handle it. Because bullying happens our whole lives. It happens in college. It happens in adulthood. It doesn't go away. So if you learn ways to handle it and look at it, you know, I mean, I'm sure you've seen this. The trolls come out when you're on, you know, when you write an article, it's going to happen. But you have to think of it this way. If you're in Central Park or in Times Square and somebody comes up to you and says, you're an idiot, you're a bad mom, you're this, that, they don't know you. They don't know who you are. They're not in your life. So you really kind of have to have that journalistic shield in a way. And then you have to use that in your regular life. And I hope I'm explaining that. I mean, if everyone can look at the essay, they could see a lot of what I was talking about.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it, and that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely, thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight
debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, this is so exciting. So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, well, what should I spend my 2 cents on? Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/Zibby.
What was the worst time you were bullied?
Let's see. I would have to say that I never felt like the cool kid, because I'm not. I'm not a cool person. You know, I always wore my heart on my sleeve. I'd walk around singing. And so I never fit in. You know, of course, you know, all those people are now like my Facebook friends and follow along what I do. But it's okay. You know, the best, what do they say? The best revenge is doing well, you know, and being happy and having a happy life and being surrounded by love and by good people. And I'm a big advocate of that. And that's why I support my students and I'm inspiring to them. And I want to be a source of inspiration, which is a big reason, back to your original question, Zibby, is why I wrote the book. You know, I really want to inspire people. I want them to feel, with the short bites that I give in my Estelle's Edge throughout, that they can do this, that mm-hmm. they can make it happen, as long as they build their craft and learn, you know, how to get noticed, get attention for their work.
Well, another thing related to, you know, childhood experience or whatever, is you write about how to deal with writing about actual people and not burning the bridges that you have. And how do you carefully, you know, document things when you have to deal with those relationships ongoing? What is your advice there?
It's really hard because, you know, you have to reveal, but you also conceal. So you don't let every single thing out there. And I had talked to Kelly McMasters in my program, who I know was, you know, on your program and your book, you know, one of your reading books, the book for your book club. And she had said that, you know, there were a lot of things that she didn't have to reveal. She revealed what was important for her story. And I feel the same way. So you're not going to find every single iota of what happened with the situation, but you're going to find the gist of what is important. And I'm a big believer, and I know Sue says this too, not to trash anyone more than that you're trashing yourself. Mm-hmm. So, like, you have to show your vulnerability on the page. And to me, it's the mark of an amateur writer when they're just trashing someone over and over and saying how bad the person is, but they're not taking any, you know, it's a relationship usually, unless it's somebody in a power differential. So I would say when you're revealing something, you have to think about whatever it is you unleash on the world, mm-hmm. be prepared for it to be unleashed back on you. Mm-hmm. So when I started out writing about my daughter, I was never like Deuce, one of those bloggers. They would write about, you know, my kids are driving me crazy. I hate them. I know. So sad.
Did you use that as a hook and write an article about it?
I did not. Okay. I didn't know her. I know a lot of people did. I know a lot of people did write about it because it's news. It was newsworthy.
It was sad. It was so sad.
Very sad that she dealt with depression, but she was also open about dealing with depression, and was one of the first ones that opened the door, because back to before then it was very sanitized. So there's a reason, you know, bloggers kind of opened the door, but I never said my kid sucks. And when I wrote for the Washington Post, my child is out of control. Mm-hmm. Here's what I'll do to fix it. I put the onus on me, right? She is having rage. She's having a tantrum because she saw me having road rage when a mom cut in front of me in carpool, you know, or she's eating too much sugar because I'm a chocoholic. And so I didn't ever want it to be, they were saying at some point, kids are going to sue their parents for the things that they read about them. And I do believe that could be happening, because as the kids age from the early bloggers, that was like 2006, you know, and beyond, it is a possibility. But I always made sure to not write, you know, my daughter's a jerk.
Yeah.
And I also made sure, you know, I wrote about my dad, you know, singing my dad back to me. He has Alzheimer's. He's very far gone now. It's not that singing is even going to bring him back at all, which is very sad. But I'm glad that I wrote that testament to him, because he's such an important part of my life. And he was such a great dad. You know, he's gone now. Even though he's alive, he's gone now. But I will always have that homage that I wrote to him and to our relationship. And to me, you know, that's what being a writer is, that being able to tell our stories and to touch other people with our stories. And I want that for my students. And I want to keep that, doing that for myself. I have so many stories to tell. I was the dating diva, and, you know, and going through dating and how I met my husband and, you know, not of my tribe and all these things. So I have more stories to tell, and so do my students. And I know you have a ton of stories to tell. It's just a wonderful seeing them all come to life. And I love your novel.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Actually, you're right. That was so poignant, what you just said about your dad. I don't know. Touched my heartstrings. I have to go read that essay. I didn't read it. I'm so sorry. I know I just spent the weekend with my mom at this writing conference, and I feel like I have to write about it before I forget, you know, because I'm already forgetting because I'm so bad. Anyway, but I don't know. I did notice, by the way, in your book, how you were talking about how you wrote about your daughter and out of control, and then how she's still out of control, and da da da, and you're like, and now she's a teenager, so I don't write about her anymore. And I was like, oh, that's the conversation I want to hear.
I actually did write about her. So there was a story that I wanted to write for a long time, and I haven't really written about her. Like, I wrote a toxic tween friend story for Good Housekeeping a couple of, like, maybe 2 years ago. But I started it framing it with her in it. She didn't want to be in it at all. I took her out of it completely. It was a strictly kind of fun, tongue-in-cheek journalistic. However, there's something that I'd wanted to write about for years and didn't have the courage. I'm hearing impaired. I've been wearing hearing aids since like decades ago, and it's genetic. My mom has it. My grandfather has it. And parenting a teenager, when you're hearing impaired, I mean, you get the snark. You know, teenagers can be snarky. It's part of their process of separating from us and becoming their own person. And I understand that. But I wanted to write about it because I finally found the courage in myself to do it, to not feel that I was going to be shamed or feel old and, you know, left behind or anything like that. So I did my research, and I pitched it to Shondaland, which sadly is not taking personal essays anymore, which is such a loss. And the editor who had done my editor and call series at NYU, which I created, accepted it and said, yeah, you know, this is, I've never seen this written about in terms of parenting. And so I wrote about it, but my 14-year-old daughter vetted every single word. She mm-hmm. read it. She looked at it and she said, like, one thing she changed, she's like, eh. And I said, okay. But she really was a big part of the process. So I feel very supported. And I don't think I'm going to be writing about her anymore, because that was like my one thing that I needed to get out there. But I don't think I will. I mean, you never know. She may come to me and say, hey, mom, write about me. And actually, she in turn herself is a beautiful writer, which is just such a surprise, because she wants to be a doctor.
Okay, as we wrap up, not only do you have all this advice for writers, but now you've written the book about writing. So on the book side of life, what advice do you have for authors of nonfiction books like yours that we might not have known?
I think that craft is so important. So take a class, you know, take a class at the School of Professional Studies where I teach at NYU, take a Zibby class, take a class for Writer's Digest where I also teach. find a teacher that you want to do some one-on-one coaching with. I think it's very important to learn how, if you're going to write a book is a different structure than a short piece because it takes a lot more energy, as you know, and it takes really being able to structure it in the right way. And so on my podcast, Freelance Writing Direct, I get a lot of actionable advice from the writers on how they are structuring their books. There's The Shit No One Tells You About Writing. There's your podcast, which is fabulous. There's so many other places, Let's Talk Memoir. There's so many other places where you can find this very valuable information. And I also think I'm a big believer, and you've seen in my book, Zibby, that no one defines your reality but you. Mm-hmm. I have been told you can't have a kid in your 40s, right? Like you shouldn't have a kid in your 40s, shouldn't get married in your 40s. You have better chance of being, you know, having a terrorist attack you than like finding someone in your 40s. I've been told you can't teach on the college level if you don't have an MFA. And what I was taught, don't go up to David Pecker and talk to him about his empire that he created, Hachette Apache, back in the 90s. And to everyone, I said, you know what? You can tell me what you think my reality should be, but I'm going to define my reality and nobody else. And so if you want to write that book, write that book. Put your energy towards it. I'm a big believer, as you know from the book, in energy, right? Where we put our intention, where we put our focus, that's where our energy goes and our creative energy. And I think learning your craft, learning your skill, and making sure that you're being open to the universe. I know this sounds very like hot pie in the sky, but the universe sometimes will direct you. Like a lot of writers say when they're writing, my character took over. Like maybe Pippa took over while you were writing blank. And maybe you wanted to write about her friend, but Pippa was taking mm-hmm. over. Well, that really does happen. Mm-hmm. And what it is, you know, our own intuition, our own creative energies, that kind of confluence between mm-hmm. you know, what we don't understand. There's more to heaven and earth, Horatio, than meets the eye is a right. famous quote. I really do believe that. So I believe being open to your own inspiration, surrounding yourself with people that support and accept you is so important, you know, because again, you know, there's something like a high wave lifts all boats. Yep, yep.
Rising tide lifts all ships. I know I say that a lot these days.
So you want to be around those yes. people, and you know the difference when you're not, because it drags your energy down yes. and holds you back. And here's my writing advice and my life advice from 3 decades of publishing. Don't let anybody hold you back.
I love that. Estelle, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Zibby.
Thanks for listening to Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. If you love it, please leave a review and follow us on social at Zibby Owens and at Zibby Readers.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Okay, I have 2 new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.